welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. There's a very interesting show lined up for you today. I am Michael Robert Kaditz, and I have three guests with me. Not guests, actually. These are co-hosts. And I'd like to give each of my co-hosts an opportunity to briefly introduce himself. So, Juska, why don't you go first?
Hello, everyone. My name is Juska. On my own time, I run my own philosophy YouTube channel. You can catch it on, it's called Juska Express. That's Jouska Express. On my Instagram, you can connect with me there. It's philosophy.express. I go to Simon Fraser University. That's all for me.
Thanks. And Tegan.
Hi, I'm Tegan Marshall, and I'm thrilled to be here. I am I'm a second-year student at BIU, but I've been attending for 3 years, pursuing a major in philosophy, hoping to pursue graduate school. So,
great. Thank you, Tegan. And Sami.
Hi, my name is Sami. I'm a third-year student at Simon Fraser University, and I love the Gettier problem. Big fan of Gettier.
Yeah. So you love problems, or just the Gettier problem?
Oh yes, I'm a philosophy major, so I have to love problems. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a job.
Yes. Yeah, philosophy is not the field to pursue if you don't like problems. At times, it seems to be a big ball of problems, right?
That's kind of all we have. Yep.
Sami, since you love the Gettier problem, would you be interested in? in starting out and
sure.
expressing what the problem is so we can
Absolutely.
Know what we're talking about today. Yeah.
So I forget which year was exactly, but a long, long time ago after Plato wrote, I think it was the Theaetetus, where he espouses a theory of knowledge, Edmund L. Gettier responds to this theory, the JTB theory of knowledge, and basically points out examples where it's inconsistent, where it self-undermines. So let me demonstrate with an example. Imagine you walk by a clock. I forget whose example this is exactly, but you're walking by a clock and you look at the clock and it's pointing right at 12 and you say to yourself, and you make the belief in your head, it's noon, right? Now, the traditional account of knowledge is JTB, justified true belief. So if you have a belief that happens to be true and it came along by a justified manner, that belief is actually knowledge. So you look at the clock and you say to yourself, it's noon. That belief seems like a true justified belief, right? But little do you know that that clock is actually broken. And it happens to be stuck at 12 o'clock at noon. But also, it's actually noon. And it just also so happens to be noon. So you do have a belief that's true and justified, but it doesn't seem like you know it's noon. In this scenario, this is the problem. The problem is all three of our conditions are met for knowledge, but we still don't seem to have it. Now, there are different ways of responding to this, and I'd like to hear what other people have to say or what other people think about the problem thus far.
Take it away, whoever wants.
Did everyone think this was a legitimate problem initially, or were people skeptical?
Yeah. I think you really nailed it on the head there. The key takeaway about the problem is that even if you have all the conditions, can you really say that you know it? So if we're going to talk about what solutions that we have in mind that we can propose to solve this dilemma is maybe I'm thinking either redefine standards for what it means to have justified true belief or add another variable into it, just by true belief in something else, to solve that problem. So I'm thinking, I don't know exactly what the solution is, but I'm thinking if there is a solution, then it's going to be either we add a new component or we change the definition of the three components that we have, if not both, where we change the standard definition and we add another component. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to bet that's our solution lies within that range.
Right. Well, traditionally, those are probably the two common methods of responding to the Gettier problem. Now, everyone has their own different flavor response, right? But they fall into similar categories of modifying justification or truth, or adding a new condition, JTB plus, right? So you're saying that the answer is between or both of these, these two solutions, possible solutions. Yeah. What does anyone else think?
Yeah, Sami, now that you've outlined the problem, I'm just wondering, just for the benefit of any listeners who have no experience in epistemology at all, and no experience at all in or familiarity with the JTB model, the traditional JTB model for knowledge. Right. I wonder if we could just back up a little bit and just explain that briefly.
Sure.
So did you want to do that?
Yeah, I can give an example. So let's go through it individually, each component. J, T, B, justify true belief. Now, B is pretty self-explanatory. It's a belief, something you have in your head. Maybe it's linguistic, maybe it's not. For example, it's noon. That's a belief. I'm hungry. It's raining. These are all beliefs. A belief is justified when the method you use to get that belief was good or epistemically proper, justifiable, reliable, all these words, right?
Verifiable,
that's a good one too. So in the clock example, the justification is your sense perception, right? So you look at the clock, it's noon. Looking is a good method of justification for a belief, right? So that's J, justification. And then the T is truth. Does your belief so happen to be true? Is it actually the case that it's noon? Is it actually the case that it's raining? So the way the Gettier problem works is by completing, by really using or fulfilling these three conditions, but still it seems that we don't have knowledge. It's driving a wedge between this supposed definition and actually having knowledge.
So let me ask you, Sami, is it always clear what constitutes sufficient justification for a belief? Or is that itself open to dispute and disagreement?
That is absolutely open to dispute. There's various accounts of justification, of what counts as justification. But in general, the Gettier problem is problematic because we want to say that our sense perception is a good method of justification, right? So some people, when they look at the Gettier problem, they say, oh, it's just because, you know, you're not using a good method. Your belief isn't justified. That's why you don't have knowledge, right? But we do want our belief to be justified in this example because we want sense perception to be a good method because it's kind of all we have, right? Observation. There are a few other examples that outline this more specifically, but in general, we want to salvage sense perception in our epistemic toolkit.
So just to clarify, does the Gettier problem arise when we are debating what constitutes sufficient justification, or does it only arise later once we've agreed that we have justification for a belief, and then we've agreed that the belief is true? Mm-hmm. Is that when we run into the Gettier problem? Because we seem to have a justified true belief and there's no dispute about those things, mm-hmm. but the problem seems to be that we don't have knowledge. Would you say that's correct? That's my understanding of the Gettier problem.
Yeah. So in the Theaetetus with Socrates, right? I forget who he's talking to exactly, but he's giving his account of knowledge. He's giving what he considers to be they're discussing the general nature of knowledge. And Socrates says a true belief with an account, right? Justified true belief in other terms. Mm-hmm. So it came out of this discussion of analyzing knowledge. And he analyzed it into these three constituent components, right? So it's kind of like the original Socratic dialogue was kind of top down. We're looking at the bigger picture, knowledge, and then analyzing its components next, right? I suppose you could get to knowledge from the other way, or the Gettier problem from the other way, from starting with the constituent components of knowledge and working up to it. But this is how it happened in the dialogue.
what is knowledge? Are we talking a correspondence theory of knowledge where knowledge is a justified true belief, true in the sense that the belief conforms to the world in itself, which would be, I believe, a correspondence theory of knowledge. So I guess what I'm trying to do is define true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're giving a right? correspondence theory of truth.
Right, correspondence theory of truth. So are we assuming that then in the JTB model? Assuming a correspondence theory of truth?
You can also supplement it. It can be anything, really, but it has to be true. So your belief can be true in different ways. It can correspond. I'm not sure any other theories of truth, but in any way you consider truth to be, it must be true in that way for it to be knowledge.
Okay. So once we agree on justification and truth, mm-hmm. and we've already said those are open to dispute, but we can't go there now, right? So there can be, I mean, in the field of epistemology, there's, you know, reams and reams of research that's been done, yeah. And dispute and debate about what constitutes justification. It's a very complex.
For sure.
You can get a PhD and still not be sure what justification is. And truth can also be open for dispute in that you could be using a correspondence theory of truth or a pragmatic theory of truth.
Sure, yeah.
But let's say we've overcome those problems and we've agreed on what justification is and what truth is. And we have a belief. And just to be a little more specific than you even were, Sami, mm-hmm. I think by belief we mean a propositional belief that has a truth value, not just, sure. Not some other kind of belief, but a belief with a truth value. Sure. So if we have those three things, JTB, traditionally, we would have knowledge. That would be the definition of knowledge in the very traditional, right? So,
absolutely.
But so the Gettier problem comes in, as I understand it, where this guy Gettier gave a number of counterexamples where you have justified true belief, but you clearly don't have knowledge.
Yeah.
So you gave an example of that before. So I think, in my understanding, that Gettier problem kicks in at that point where you have JTB, but you don't have knowledge.
Exactly. So I can illustrate with another example.
Sure.
So I forget who gave this. Was this Goldman or Kripke? I don't remember. Anyway, imagine you're in a car. You're the passenger in a car, and you're driving through a city. You look outside the window, and you see a barn. And you think to yourself, you may even say out loud, look, it's a barn, or that's a barn. Little do you know, you're in faux Barnesville, and that barn is actually just a replica. It's a fake. It's just a prop, right? In this case, you have a... that's a fake barn, but behind it is an actual real barn, right? So in this case, you have a justified true belief, because look, there's a barn. It's justified because your sense perception and, well, it's a belief, right? We don't have knowledge in this case. At least we'd like to say that you don't know there's a barn in that field over there, right?
Yeah, you don't know because you kind of got lucky, right? Like you it was for the wrong reasons that you believed.
Precisely.
So there's a difference between luck and knowledge. And so what we want to say here is that luck is not identical to knowledge. You can believe something and it may turn out to be true.
Yes.
But if you believed it for the wrong reasons, you didn't have knowledge. You just got lucky.
Knowledge is not compatible with luck. That is basically what the Gettier problem hinges on. Now, in Gettier cases, luck strikes twice, right? So like in the clock example, there's an instance of bad luck where the clock is broken, but there's an instance of good luck when it's actually 12 o'clock, when it's actually noon, right? All these Gettier cases have this double striking luck, right? Luck in two instances, one bad luck, one good luck. Same thing in faux barns. And Gettier says, no, we can't have, or he's basically elucidating that, look, we have this intuition that says knowledge can't be compatible with luck. So what gives?
Let me of what I, an example, then you guys tell me if this is a Gettier type counterexample. Sure. So it's my own. I came up with this myself. I didn't read it on Wikipedia or in a textbook or anything. So I'm in a room. I have no windows or no access to the outside. I'm just in a room, and somebody walks in the room completely drenched, dripping wet, And I happen to also know that the weather forecast this morning that I saw on TV was calling for rain. So I make a claim. I now have a belief that it's raining outside. And my belief is justified because I heard the weather forecast and because some guy walks in dripping wet. So I have a justified belief that it's raining. Well, it turns out I start talking to the guy and he said, oh, I'm wet because my friend just sprayed me with a hose on my way in. He played a practical joke on me and sprayed me with a hose. And that's why I'm wet. Mm-hmm. So what's more, I just found out that the weather forecast I listened to was from a week ago. So it turns out that my two reasons for believing that it was raining, neither of them hold. Neither of them were what I thought they were. But it so happens by coincidence it was raining. Yeah. I open the door and it is raining. Mm-hmm. So the two reasons I used for my justification, the weather forecast turned out to be old, and the guy was wet because he got sprayed with a hose. Those weren't justification at all when it came down to the fact that they were wrong, right? But it was raining by sheer luck. It happened to be raining. Well, so
yeah,
is this a Gettier problem? And did I have knowledge it was raining?
I'd like to ask you if you think that you did know it was raining according to the JTB theory of knowledge. So if your two reasons you recognized afterwards, sorry, I'm not sure if that was part of the example. Did you recognize that your two reasons of justification were faulty?
No, not until later. So when I opened the door and it was raining, I said, whoa, it's raining. I was justified and my belief is true. So it met the JTB criteria. I was justified in believing it was raining because I heard a weather forecast. I didn't know it was outdated. And I was also justified because my friend was wet. So I say it's raining, but then I talked to my friend later and he says, no, I got sprayed by a hose. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that my computer, malfunctioned, I was actually looking at the last week's forecast. So I think it's a Gettier problem. I think I was justified and my belief was true, but I didn't have knowledge.
I agree. Yeah. Sorry. Go on, Tegan.
I mean, I agree that that's a Gettier problem, but there's a problem even within the Gettier problem, though.
What's that exactly?
is that there's, because going to the clock example that you used early, Sami, mm-hmm. you used Bertrand Russell's example that he would use to discuss knowledge. And I think we talked about earlier, like the whole premise of the Gettier problem is you can have a justified true belief, but without knowledge. But the thing is, I think we almost need to have a discussion because as Sami and I discussed at a meeting earlier, in terms of patching the theory, but before I get there, let me add that Gettier doesn't offer a solution to this problem. He's just like, you know what? This is a problem. You figure it out. Mm-hmm. But also, I think there are situations where intuition can be inferred. And the example I would suggest, because you could say formulating the belief that it's 3 o'clock in your head or whatever time it was with the clock, mm-hmm. You could say that that's technically an intuition that you have, because you look at someone like, say, military personnel, mm-hmm. who are retired. They are trained on a rigorous timing schedule. So even once they're no longer in combat, their body still responds with that automatic intuition that, oh, it's time to get up.
I see.
And so I think, and if we go to it even before Gettier's time, an example of a Gettier problem from Dematurra, it's quite simply that there is a fire burning to roast some meat, and there is a spectator from a great distance. The fire has not started burning yet, but a great number of flies have started to gather because of the heat. The spectator has a belief that sees the flies not as flies but as smoke, and so has the belief that there is a fire burning. And they are accurate. There is a fire burning, but the one thing they would point to, the smoke, is faulty. Mm-hmm. So I think you run into a situation where you have to ask the question of where does prior experience come in to formulating a belief? And I guess with the rain situation, you could say that, well, I've been outside and it's rained and I've gotten wet. You could make that, but I don't know, any thoughts on including intuition to the JTB?
Well, I've taken this route before when in regarding the Gettier problem, because to me, there seems to be this divide between knowledge and intuition, right? When we say we know something, it almost seems like we mean more than I have an intuition. And that's kind of the philosophical tradition, is that knowledge is something to acquire. It's a status thing, right? And an intuition doesn't count as knowledge, if you ask a lot of philosophers, right? But I do think there is a discussion here to be had about the nature of intuition itself. Anything? Because I don't know exactly.
Sami, what about the belief that I have a headache?
Right. What do you mean exactly?
Well, does that require justification? Does it require any inferences, or do I simply have
knowledge
because is it just it's a propositional claim. I have a headache.
The belief you have a headache is something else. A knowledge that you have a headache requires JTB under Plato, right? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm asking. Can we apply a JTB model to that propositional belief? I have a headache.
Sure. Well, if you have justification, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, your senses, your mm-hmm. nerves, and mm-hmm. you have the truth, and you are indeed having a headache, right? Mm-hmm. And you form the belief, I have a headache, then there you go. You have knowledge of the headache, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you have an intuition of a headache, I'm not even sure what that would mean, honestly, but it, to me, it's kind of different than I know I have a headache, right? An intuition to me kind of just boils down to like the gut feeling, or like maybe just a belief that's not justified, but you believe is true. I don't know exactly what an intuition, something like that. What do we think intuition is?
The J, I think, the justification. So it's not verified, but you have that inkling feeling that it's true.
Mm-hmm. How do you know it's true then, is the question. Because if it's not justified.
Yeah, I think the how do you know something is true lies in the justification. So Tegan brought up the point of intuition, and I think I want to use the fake Barnes example as a way to draw my point here. So you, in the fake Barnes example, you point to a barn that is fake, and then you say, there's a real barn. And then it turns out that barn is fake, but behind it is a real barn. So I pointed in that general direction, there actually is a real barn. So, but then, like, I kind of question the validity of the justification there, because everybody knows that you're pointing at the fake barn. You're pointing in that general direction, but everybody knows that you're pointing specifically at that fake barn. So can you really say that you're justified? Isn't that just a very over-glorified intuition?
I see your point.
Yeah.
We can modify the example to kind of escape that problem. So imagine instead of pointing and then saying, look over there, there's a barn. Imagine my belief instead was, there's a barn in that field over there.
Okay.
So now my belief applies to this entire field. And we all know which field I'm talking about.
Right.
And we all purport to know which barn I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But
and there's a
the
fake
truth...
barn and a real barn in it.
Exactly, exactly. So we, I mean, I do have a JTB, and it doesn't seem like I have knowledge, right? Now, I mean, we want the ability to point at something and say, look, I have a belief that that thing is there, right? Because we do this every day of our lives, and we can't really escape it. A good theory of knowledge, I think, should account for this kind of justification method. Go on.
I was going to say, in support of what you're saying, Swami, that if I am standing on the edge of a highway and I look down the road and I see a truck coming mm-hmm. at me at 100
Dear God.
Very high speed.
Right.
I want to say that I'm justified in believing that I should not walk out on that highway. I want to say that I'm justified in believing that there's a danger to me. We've got to agree that some beliefs are simply justified,
well,
right?
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly. So there has to be some baseline, right?
Right.
So let's try, as a group, let's try to keep that method of justification, okay? Just for, cleanliness sake.
Can you repeat?
The method being sense perception, right?
Okay.
Looking and pointing.
Right.
Right. Yeah, with an asterisk that we could have another debate on how reliable is sense perception, but then we're getting away from the Gettier problem. So as I said earlier, if we want to get to the Gettier problem, we haven't yet gotten to the how we can attempt to address it,
well,
which I want to do soon.
Yeah.
But if we want to even get there, we have to at least agree that there are at least some cases where we have a justified true belief, but we don't have knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah, we I think we're all persuaded by the Gettier problem. The question now is what gives, really? Like, what do
right.
we...
What do we do?
What do we change? So what we've been talking about thus far is justification, basically. We've
mm-hmm.
been talking about, what counts, what doesn't count as justification. I mean, really, should pointing in a field and saying there's a barn in that field count as justification? I mean, should our sense perception really count? Goldman had this really cool theory of justification called reliabilism. And his theory basically boils justification down to the method used to justify and how reliable that method is in general.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the way he would have phrased that. I'm really paraphrasing, but the gist is your method, like, probabilistically, how reliable is it? And given how, like, reliable it is, that's in as much as your belief is justified.
So, and back to the clock example, if
mm-hmm.
I have a clock on my wall that I've been living in this house for 15 years, that clock has never failed me. It's always been right. I have no reason to believe the clock's wrong. But it just so happened, unbeknownst to me, that this morning it finally gave out. The gear finally gave out at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I look up at it and it says 3 o'clock. So am I justified in believing that it's 3 o'clock?
Under Goldman's, reliabilism, yes, you are. But Goldman
mm-hmm.
adds something because, well, let me explain why. Because, if it worked every day for the remainder of your life up until this point, that's kind of reliable, it seems, right? It seems like that method has worked, probabilistically at least.
Hume might disagree.
Hume would disagree, yes.
But
so,
that's another topic.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
Goldman adds a condition to JTB. He says there has to be some causal traced element. So you have to be able to trace the causal chain of getting that belief to some starting point. And how that chain folds out, how reliable the method was to get from that starting to believe to the end causally is in as much as your belief is justified.
So Goldman is attempting to modify the justification, the justification component of JTB. Am I getting you correctly here?
He does. Reliabilism is its own thing. Goldman.
Yeah.
He definitely does believe that, yes. He adds another component to JTB, the causal method, right? The causal condition.
Yeah. I think one good way to illustrate this is the causal method and the whole reliable stuff is, so one good one word that I would like that's relevant here is verification. So let's say, Michael, that you say, oh, it's 3 o'clock because the clock says so. So the causal thing would say that, okay, well, how do you know that it's, you would say, oh, you know that it's 3 o'clock because the clock has struck three. So you're running under the assumption that the clock is still working. So I think that whole reliabilism thing is demanding that you verify that the clock is still working when you set that latest claim. So if yesterday you say that the clock is 3 o'clock because the clock is working at 3 and you check it's working, then you're good. And if today you make the same claim, you have to check again that it's working. You cannot say, oh, it's been working my entire life, therefore I'm not going to check again. If you want to make a new claim that it's working at 3 o'clock, then you're going to have to check again. And I think I don't know if that causal thing addresses that, but that's something that I would definitely address, where you have to make up, if you're going to make a present claim, you're going to have to make a present justification.
Well, I mean, this is not a topic that is in my ballpark of expertise by any means. In fact, I gotta be honest, I find the Gettier problem annoying, because it literally makes you question everything. But see, it's interesting you bring up the idea, Juska, that the reliabilism forces the individual to reevaluate the claim or the backing of the claim before they make it. I think what we can tend to fall into, though, is the idea that Bertrand Russell presents, that there are universals, that universally you as an individual accept that clock is working. And there is going to be a large majority of the time where you are not consciously checking that assumption. So when we talk about the Gettier problem and having assurance of knowledge, see, I think there is a issue there, because unless we look at universal aspects of knowledge, like Sami and I discussed, okay, if there's no true knowledge, then we gotta kind of throw out a priori knowledge, because we're claiming a priori knowledge is prior knowledge. It's, in a sense, it's base knowledge that you just kind of have. It's not learned knowledge. So the thing is, you learn when it's raining outside. You learn when it's snowing outside. But would it be fair to say that Gettier doesn't account for knowledge, which is, well, I guess we have to really get into a separate debate of then.
Yeah.
Does a priori knowledge exist, or was it just a nice thought that Plato had, you know?
But I see your point, yeah. If I may take it away. Sorry.
Please.
Go on. So there's this conversation about universals and what it means to know a universal, right? Does sound like the conversation of a priori knowledge. So Kant talks a lot about a priori synthetic knowledge, right? So he talks about stuff like space and time. So you know space and time exist, kind of a priori. Like you basically cannot even doubt these things exist. And if you did, you couldn't live. Like you couldn't get out of bed in the morning, right? Because then you'd fall through a non-Euclidean hole in your floor. Like you have to know these things basically somehow. But one could argue, interestingly enough, this connects back to the intuition debate we had. One could argue that, or not debate, instance, topic. One could argue that these universals are nothing but intuitions. inescapable, unshakable intuitions that we have about the world, right? So it's almost like automatic beliefs that are so deeply baked into our psyches that we cannot choose but to believe them, but to shake them. But I don't know if that counts as knowledge.
And this is my objection to Kant. You know, this would be a great topic, but because we can't help but believe these things, doesn't make them true. and Kant sort of admits that when he says that, well, it's the phenomenal world, and we don't know that it's the way the world really is, because the way the world really is would be revealed in the noumenal world, which we have no access to. So I've always had a problem with Kant asking us to accept the way that we experience things, you know, phenomenally, as therefore the truth.
Well, I don't think you can doubt space and time exist. That's kind of what Kant's saying, right? That you can't doubt this stuff. The question is, do you know that space and time exist? I don't think so. Personally, I don't think you can even begin to justify that claim. Like Hume, right? Or Descartes. You can't really prove causation or the exterior world.
Well, yeah. You know, you brought up Descartes, and, you know, we've talked a lot about sensory perception tonight, mm-hmm. and whether that is a valid form of validation and justification, you know, brain in the vat scenario, what if we're all being manipulated anyways, you know, but, you know, we all know the famous, you know, René Descartes quote, I think therefore I am, right? And this is the fact that we're asking the question of what is absolute knowledge to, or what is true knowledge? I think, to bring in a good existentialist friends, I can't talk tonight apparently, is he would say, in Heidegger would say, in asking the question, we already have at least a limited availability to the phenomenon. Certain knowledge is, like, there is definitely certain knowledge we can have, I think. My heart is beating. Therefore, that's pretty certain. We can scientifically test this.
And how do you know it's your heart beating? How do you know it's your heart?
Well, okay. It's a heart within my bodily construct, which you could say is a perception which could be manipulated. But that's another thing. You know, this is why for Kant the pursuit of science is where that's what separates us from animals, right? So the pursuit of absolute knowledge is something I think we can get to in a sense, but at the same time we're all going to be limited by our own personal experiences and therefore biases to say what is absolute.
Okay, let's come back down to earth. We've drifted off, and nothing wrong with it. We've drifted off into a metaphysical and epistemological debate. But let's get back to the Gettier problem. So let's say that we all agree that there are at least some cases, and we've described a couple of them, where we have a belief that seems to be justified, and it's true, but it doesn't make sense to say we have knowledge. So Sami has outline one of the possible additions we can make, right? A modification by addition to the JTB model. And I think, Sami, you said that Goldman had a reliability addition, which is we need to trace back a causal, right? Causal. So we would need to trace back the reliability of the inference you're making, right? So was the clock really reliable? Whether you did it or not is another matter from whether in theory. So this isn't a prescriptive thing. This is a philosophical thing, right? We're not telling people you should always, you know, like check the history of the clock before you read the time. We're just saying that we're trying to solve the problem of how is it that you don't have knowledge, but you had a justified true belief when you looked at your clock and it was stuck on three. So that's one approach. There's another approach, which is similar. It's Michael Clark's approach, which is, in addition to JTB, which is that there would be no false beliefs. No false beliefs. So you would have knowledge if you have a justified true belief, which with no false false belief. And the false belief in the case of the clock example would be you falsely believed that the clock was functioning properly. So that's one attempt at a solution, but there's problems with that, which we can get to in a minute, but I wanted to see what you guys think about that solution. Simply adding on, and you weren't relying on a false belief.
I like this method more than JTB, because instead of offering a necessary condition, truth, it offers a sufficient condition, which is at least not false, which is, I think, probably better epistemically because logic. But I'd like to see what the criticisms are against this argument specifically.
There are some. So one of them is, imagine you're a detective and you make the claim that your suspect committed a crime, and it's based on evidence, say, from three or four different sources. So what if one of your sources turns out to be incorrect? So that what you were relying on in part, you were relying on that false belief that one of your sources, one of your eyewitnesses actually saw your suspect commit the crime, but it turns out later that your eyewitness was making it up. So if we were sticking to the strict addition to JTB of no false beliefs, we would have to say, well, therefore you didn't have knowledge because one of your witnesses was giving false testimony. But clearly that doesn't work because you have other witnesses that support your belief, and it turns out your belief was true. So it seems like the no false belief addition to JTB is too strict. It's too narrow because it would start excluding knowledge.
Mm-hmm. That objection's interesting to me because it kind of supposes something like Goldman's, or to me it seems like it supposes something like Goldman's causal condition, because they're saying, look, you have this you have this true belief that your suspect committed a crime, right? And that belief is made or based on other beliefs, right? Or we can even call that knowledge. We can call you know your suspect committed a crime because it passes all three conditions, right? But that belief, I don't see why it has to be based on knowledge, right? That knowledge doesn't have to be based on other things that we know, right? So we believe that that four of our suspects or four of our eyewitnesses are telling the truth, right? But those beliefs in themselves don't have to be knowledge for us to justify the knowledge claim that my suspect is a criminal, right? To me, it doesn't seem like a necessary objection. Sorry, go on. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it wouldn't be correct, though, to simply add to JTB that there were no false beliefs. Mm-hmm. So because there might be false beliefs, but you might have sufficient justification elsewhere. You might have true beliefs and false beliefs, and your true beliefs might provide sufficient justification. So the mere fact that there was at least one false belief that you relied upon, it seems that would not in and of itself disqualify it would not negate your justification.
Right. So maybe it doesn't suppose a causal condition, but it could suppose something like a reductionist condition, or maybe just a reductionist account of belief. So they're saying is, look, you have this belief that your suspect is a criminal, and that reduces to these other beliefs you have about believing your eyewitnesses, right? Look, you have mm-hmm. one false belief, and that breaks the condition, so you don't have knowledge, right? And that seems like you do know that your suspect is a criminal, right? I like this approach.
Yeah, it seems like one false belief, one or more false beliefs, should not in and of themselves disqualify your belief as knowledge. So we have to be more specific about those false beliefs. And so one of the ways that we can do that is by using what's called the no defeater addition to JTB. So rather than saying no false beliefs, we say no defeater, no defeating beliefs. So in the case of the one bad witness, it might be the case that was a false belief. You were relying on false information from that one witness, but it didn't defeat your justification because you still had justification, sufficient justification from the other witnesses. So this is a sort of a nuanced addition to JTB, which is the no defeater inferences.
Well, I think also that's almost a statistical support. So the percentage, even with one false witness, the reliability of your argument, if you have four witnesses, is still pretty high. And so I think, I don't know, do you think there's something that could be done with that in terms of a probability argument? Because that seems to be what Gettier's fighting against a little bit, is our common assumption that we assume that, you know, A plus B must equal C. Or am I just off the mark on that one?
I see what you're saying. You definitely could put that in like a reliabilist framework. You could say you have reliable evidence or a reliable justification for this belief, so it does seem justified in that sense. I want to bring up an idea that I had about JTB or the Gettier problem, specifically about B, the belief portion. So there's like this weird thing that happens when we give the belief a linguistic value, right? So like when I say, so for example, imagine we're eating breakfast together, okay? And we're at a table and we're both eating our breakfast and I say to you, pass the orange juice, right? And in response, you pour orange juice into your cupped hands and then pass it to me and hand it to me. Obviously, this is not what I meant. I did not mean, you did hand me the orange juice, didn't you? You did. So it is true that you did hand me the orange juice, but that's not what I meant. I meant hand me the carton of orange juice. I want orange juice in my cup, right? Not in your hands. So when I said, hand me the orange juice, I was relying on implicit context for you to understand what I meant, which was hand me the carton of orange juice, right? This is the same thing in the Gettier problem, I think. Because in the Gettier problem, we're applying a linguistic notion to belief, right? So we're saying, look, the clock says it's noon. Or sorry, let's go bare bones. It's noon, right? That's what our belief says. But is that what I mean? In the same sense that hand me the orange juice doesn't mean, you know, pass me the actual juice, does it's noon actually mean that? I don't think so. In fact, there are a plethora of things that we don't mean for sure. So when I say it's noon, I obviously don't mean it's noon in Guatemala, right? I don't mean, unless I'm located in Guatemala, but I don't mean it's noon universally everywhere in the world, right? I mean at least something like in my time zone, it's noon. Or specifically, you could mean this clock, according to this clock, it is noon. Right. But notice.
Very interesting. So, Sami, let me see if I got you right. So what you're proposing is a solution to the Gettier problem, not by adding something to JTB, but rather by a new understanding, a new conception of what the belief is, what the claim believes. So what you're saying is that if I were to say, oh, it's 3 o'clock, what I'm really saying is the clock says it's 3 o'clock. And if that's the case, then I do have knowledge. Well, we don't have a Gettier problem.
So it's sort of like that. So when I say according to this clock, it is noon, I have a justified true belief, right? Because according to the clock, it is noon, right? And it does seem like I have knowledge of this. It does seem like I know that according to this clock, it is noon, right? I may not know that it is noon, but I can point to the specific particular in the world and then make the claim, right? So it's a strategy of semantic assent. I'm basically saying it's shameless.
I like it. No, I like it. It's true. This is true philosophy. It's true mind manipulation. it's of our own. You know, like manipulating ideas to reform them in our minds. That's the way I see it. So in the case of the claw, in the case of the rain example, if I understand you correctly, Sami, what you're suggesting is that when I say my belief is that it's raining outside, what I'm really saying if we adjust the semantics here, what I'm really saying is that I have reason to believe it's raining outside.
Sure, yeah, exactly. That could
and
be
and
what
if
you
that's
mean.
What I'm saying, so in other words, the justification is included within the belief, and therefore if the justification turns out to be wrong, it doesn't matter because my belief wasn't that it was actually raining. My belief was simply that I had justification for my claim
yeah,
that it was raining,
exactly.
Which is a self, how do you say it? It's a self-justifying sort of way of looking at this.
Basically,
but also your claim is made in that moment. It doesn't apply ever after.
That's also true.
It's not bound by it's bound by time and yeah, exactly. And I remember Sami and I, we talked about this very thing, right? There are linguistic problems with language and putting things into language that don't always translate. And
absolutely,
I think that's where you have to realize that, you know, what I may mean by something based on my upbringing and experience could be vastly different from what Sami says or Juska says or Michael says. Just like we have references that people born 10 years ago wouldn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Sami, I don't like this solution. I really object to this solution. Let me tell you why.
Sure.
As I understand it, what it does is there's an epistemological problem here, because what it does is it sort of automatically defines anything we believe as justified. If you reduce belief to mere belief that you're justified, then what is the correspondence theory of knowledge? It seems that there must be some way of expressing a belief in the way the world is in itself. And it seems to me like the solution you're proposing here, Sami, is that we redefine belief to simply mean you believe in your own justification.
Not necessarily. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
So if
okay.
I said, if I formed the belief, according to this clock, it's noon. But imagine that instead of looking at the clock, which is fairly reliable sense or justification method, imagine I looked through a kaleidoscope, right? Imagine I look – or whatever. I look through I got – secondhand testimony of a friend who saw the clock 3 hours ago, right? That's bad justification. And that doesn't justify my belief that according to this clock, it is noon, right? Still, even after we appeal to the semantic ascent strategy, we don't have knowledge here. And it's right that we don't have knowledge because we don't know that clock. According to that clock, it is noon. So there isn't, I see your issue here. It's that when we are being more specific about our belief, we're kind of adding something to it, right? Like the meaning of it kind of changes, then it's noon, right? This leads to an interesting conversation of meaning in general. So what do we mean when we say it's noon? Because if it's what I'm saying, then get your problem false. But if there
so your
are
response to my your, yeah. your response to my objection is that you still need to be justified in believing you're justified.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Yeah.
Good response. Tegan, where are you right now with this new approach?
Well, I agree with Sami's response to you. That we still need to have a fairly concrete justification to be justified. We still need a reasonable... In some senses, when we talk about knowledge, we're talking about, in a sense, because there's a deeper question of can we have absolute knowledge? But the question, I guess, would say is, in your justification, you try to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you're justified. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, I think I'm just going to leave it there because I'm a little confused at the moment, to be honest.
Right.
No, it sounds like you're right in there. I think that it's a confusing topic, and So we've outlined several different approaches to the Gettier problem, for everything from adding on a few conditions to reconceptualizing justification, or reconceptualizing belief also, right? Right, Sami?
Yeah, precisely. This really opens the door to a huge linguistic discussion, right? Or semantic discussion at that. Because now we're discussing the nature of language, or at that, how the nature of language affects belief, right? Which is a really interesting and kind of unintuitive overlap, because we're saying that, look, the way we speak changes how we think, right? Or the nature of our speaking implies on, or says something about the nature of our thinking.
Was this one of the points made by the deconstructionists? The point has been made that when you speak about something, when you even observe something, when you interact with something, it changes the thing. So it sounds like what you're saying, Sami, is related to that. Like it's very anti-Russellian here, right? Because Russell talked about his project being the analytic inventory of facts in the world, and yet what we're speaking about now is that we don't have a static world that we can inventory because it changes as we interact with it, right?
I'm not totally on board with post-structuralism, but yeah. I see, like Jacques Derrida, I see what he's trying to do in that project. It is kind of similar, like, différence. I think it's called. He says that every time we say a word, we kind of defer the meaning of that to something, to some other word, right? We defer. Yeah. It is kind of on the lines of that, but I don't go all the way.
Yeah, because in a way when you, I was just going to add on to that because it's really important that that we acknowledge that semantics plays a role here in the Gettier problem, because when we use a word, we're kind of conceptualizing it as that word. And, there have been studies where because different European languages like English or French, they conceptualize numbers differently. It actually has an effect on how good they are at mathematics. So, for example, in English, 80 is 810. In French, it's 420. So huge difference there, right? And it's apparently it plays a role in how you conceptualize the world. So tying it down to the Gettier problem, you're going to see how it plays a role in how you conceptualize justification, how you conceptualize truths and belief.
Absolutely.
And going on to what Michael said, I think, Michael, what you're saying is if you try to ascribe a word to a phenomenon, you're kind of divorcing it from the actual phenomenon, just like how in algebra we use the variable x to represent something, but that x is not actually that something, it's a representation of the phenomenon. And we have to keep that in mind, because when we're talking about the Gettier problem, we're the semantics is going to play a role in how we divorce it from the actual problem and how we view the components of the problem. So,
right. So
the more we talk about it, the more difficult it's going to be to solve it.
Right, because what we're discovering is that part of the problem is the way we conceptualize the problem itself.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what we're getting to here, which is the world isn't a static thing, which is independent of us, and we're just studying it, but rather we're interacting with it. And now we're getting into this problem of how the way we think about things affects our ability to solve the problem. It's not just a problem sitting there that we have to solve. Hey, our time's actually up, you guys, but thank you so much, Juska, Tegan, Sami. I'm Michael Robert Kaditz. You've been listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show, and we hope you'll listen again. Thanks so much.